I guess for Chinese, Wang is a common last name, so I'm the second Wang in this section. The topic I will give to you is how changes in diet and physical activity affect the weight loss and glycemic control. And I'm not really emphasizing on the statistical methodologies, but really the results part. This is a project based on the IMPRESS paper. It's Alliance for the Healthy Border Factors Related to Weight Reduction and Glycemic Success. I will start with the introduction and talk about research goals and give you a little bit of detail about this AHB program and a list of the measurements and results, and then end it with a conclusion discussion. And we all know that Hispanic population is really disproportionately labeled by the diabetes. And in U.S., it's estimated that a big amount of the population has diabetes. And diabetes is really a costly disease. And it's, the quality of the diabetic life also, you know, is becomes when the combinations developed, you know, and you know, when the disease progress, so the health cost high, the patient's life of quality very low, and according to the National Diabetes Prevention and Control Program, 1 in 10 Hispanic adults in U.S. have diabetes. Well, it estimated that 1 in 3 Hispanic adults live with diabetes but undiagnosed. And Hispanics have a higher diabetes prevalence and mortality rates than other ethnic populations. Well, type 2 diabetes also Hispanic has more chance to have that. Have the diabetes-related combinations than the non-Hispanic white populations. So, and you know, the border has a very high concentration of Hispanic population. And according to the 2010 census, you know, in the next 10 years, the population growth will mainly in the Hispanic population. So we can imagine, you know, with Hispanic populations aging, and also there's the population's growing, and the diabetes, you know, and plus those undiagnosed diabetes gonna keep increasing, and so we can imagine all taxpayers' dollars will be spending, and we want to help that. And the one way out will be prevention, so we will talk about that later. So the border states, where later we talk about AHB, really included 4 border states because of the high concentration of the Hispanic population. About 16% of border residents suffer from type 2 diabetes, which is much higher than the nationwide percentage, and also higher than the other side of the border. Diabetes death rate for border Hispanics is about 3 times more than the non-border Hispanic white. And the hospital discharge rates are higher for the border Hispanics than non-Hispanic white and non-border Hispanics. So that makes the border populations kind of special there, need a special attention. And there's a bunch of disparities. Disparities really a big area for health workers to study on. There's a social disparities, you know, for the Hispanic population, for the border population, they're poor, they're low educational level, they're unemployed, uninsured. And according to recently I read a paper, you know, it says 16% of the whole U.S. countries are uninsured, but that percentage is much higher in the border area. And many Hispanics live in colonia. Colonia is really poor, it's undeveloped area. Sometimes there's not even street name, and there's no street light, no pavements, no drainage. So it's really disadvantaged area. And of course, there will be health disparities. You know, they're disproportionately affected by diabetes, obesity, and CVD, and also disabilities. And also there's healthcare disparities. Less diabetes self-care instruction, and there's less physiological testing and eye examinations. And one reason health workers find out is there's a health provider is not enough amount there. Well, especially, you know, really serving those poor community. Overall, Hispanics with diabetes have less access to health care and are less likely to be insured. And well, you can imagine if they're not insured, they don't have that, but that means they will not go to see the doctor regularly. You know, ADA recommended that for the diabetics patients, you know, they're supposed to have two screenings within half a year window. And if they do not do that regular screening, you know, prevention there, regularly self-care there, and then they end up with use emergency room a lot. I think it this morning, I remember today, I listened to a talk, so in the hospital, just a talk before me, right? It's the hospital, when they're hospitalized, you know, they're gonna go back again. So, if they, if they somehow can manage, send those diabetes patients to go to see the doctor regularly and be educated, take good care of themselves, and then they will end up with using less emergency room. But that's a totally, you know, a separate project I've done before. But this one we want to emphasize on the what factors related to the weight gain and weight loss and glycemic control. Well, for diabetes, what cause and affect diabetes? Studies shows that diabetes partially caused by the non-modifiable genetic factors. You know, there's some papers related to that. And also modifiable lifestyle factors also play an important role in prevention and control of the diabetes. And this is still ongoing research. I have been listen to the talks. You know, people still study what kind of gene Hispanic have lead them to become obesity. You know, but of course, for the gene, there we cannot change it. We want to really emphasize on the modifiable lifestyle factors, which is a diet and physical activities. So here's the purpose of this study. We want to examine the factors related to success in achieving the weight reduction and glycemic control in the aliens of the Healthy Border, which is a chronic disease prevention program. We want to emphasize on, does the program matter? You know, the intervention program, for example, length of the program, the program delivery method, and so on and so forth. So, and also we want to look at what are the effects of the modified lifestyle factors, you know, namely the physical activity and diet habits. So the AHP is a chronic disease prevention program run through 2006 through 2008. Excuse me. And this is provided resources for nutrition and the physical activity education programs at 12 federal qualified community health centers, you know, along the border states. And the initiative was sponsored by Feather Inc. Company. The goals were to reduce those risk factors, modifiable risk factors, and also to develop or modify the existing preventing program that target to the Hispanic border population, and also to identify and promote best practice, you know, according to the, you know, the, in terms of the prevention of those diseases. So, and this, each of this 12 educational program was unique in its curriculum, program length, and delivery method. OK, Okay. But they are all based on the culturally sensitive programs focused on the improving nutrition, increasing physical activity, and preventing and managing diabetes and cardiovascular disease. I won't be able to have time to go through the details, but there's programs last 12 weeks, and they deliver by group sessions. So that, you know, the participants will be sit in the group like this, you know, the promoter or the health educator give the lecture, lesson there, you know. And there could be the programs last 8 weeks, but they do the individual session. So it's one-on-one. You know, the promoter can go to their home and do the one-on-one education. Okay. Now we're going to look at how we're going to measure this outcomes and also the predictors. Upon the completion of the phase one, you know, which is ended at by the end of the 07, there were 2,304 took the survey. You know, they have this developed a questionnaire and baseline measurements. 1,500 finished the end of program interview and measurements, and a little bit more than 1,000 completed the post 6 month interview and collected measurements. And we have demographics, we have center program characteristics, four of them, and we have baseline measurements, end of program measurements, and post 6 month measurements. And this is a descriptive analysis for this social demographic factors. And as you can see, you know, this is there's more female there, and the different age group, marital status, birth country. Most of them are born in Mexico. Okay, but that's, you know, a specific capture for the border population, and employment. And you know, many of them are a homemaker, you know, and either retired or they are unemployed or unable to work. The education is really, you know, level is very low. Middle school or less, almost half of them has middle school or less education, and income is very low. But insurance, almost 54% of them have no insurance, you know. And remember, I just mentioned nationwide is I see that the number is 16% nationwide. But for this population, well, the sample size is kind of big, you know, so it's really a big concern. And for the, you know, I mentioned that there's 12 programs unique in the curriculums and things, and we captured this center characteristics using these four measures. Overall quality of the program is a group session versus individual session, and we also use the program duration and also the adapted or developed curriculum. For those developed curriculum, is really the center, the community center, the health center, really you know, based on their observation of the community, they develop, you know, their curriculum. Oh, another thing I need to go back. And do you notice that for the high quality program, you know, their attention rate tends to be, you know, very high and stable from the beginning to the end of program and even the post 6 months. So here's the results. Well, for the results, you know, the dependent variable is, you know, whether the weight loss success. And weight loss success is defined for different categories of the baseline BMI. If it's normal, then any weight loss is considered success. If they are obese or if they are overweight or obese, then the weight loss must be at least 5% of weight loss will be considered as a success. And similarly, you know, for the glycemic control, you know, for the hemoglobin level is less than 6, you know, the maintaining will be considered success. If they're between 6 and 7, you know, 5% reduced will be considered success. If they're between 7.1 to 7.6, will 10% reduced will be considered success. If it's beyond 7.6, then 15% of the reduced will be considered success. that is at both end of the program and post the 6 month. Okay, well, I guess I see this slide first. So here's the result using the logistic regression model. Well, this is still pretty much the descriptive analysis, but it's a little bit chi-square test showing, you know, there's a pairwise association between the dependent variable, the success, and predictors. We see the age is kind of significant there, you know. Column-wise, this is a weight reduction success, program end, and the 6 month post. And a glycemic success, program end, and 6 month post. The employment significant there, and well, this is only based on the chi-square test. And of course, that we expect the baseline health factors will, majority of them will be related with the success. Okay. And then here's the logistic regression analysis result. We see the gender for the female is less likely to success. You know, that's make a female is a weaker group. You know, there's a lot of programs they do aim at, you know, promoting a female, you know, the Hispanics, you know, physical activity, you know, control their body weight and so on and so forth. And then, of course, age is also a significant effect there. If you are younger, well, here, if you're older, there's less possibility you're going to success at program end and also the 6 month post. And also for the glycemic change also. So that means the elder group is disadvantaged to be success. Okay. And however, keep in mind, Hispanic population is aging rapidly. You know, so that, you know, should attract health workers' attention. And also employment status related to that. And education was not significant at all. And incomes only for this group, you know, they earn more. Of course, it will be more likely to have success at the end of the program, at end of the program for the weight reduction. And insurance, you know, remember we see insurance rate is high, right? But the insurance is only, you know, related to the end of program weight loss. Success, but for not for the other three. And the diabetes, you know, if they have diabetes, there's less likely they're going to have those success, you know. Probably they already, you know, it's just harder for them to do more exercise, to control the diet or something there. And the body mass index, of course, you know, for the overweight and obese people, they're less likely to be success. And smoking, former smoker, they are more likely to success. So this is another thing, it's a modifiable lifestyle, you know. So this through the alcohol use, tobacco use, and those kind of things, we can through the education, we can promote that. And family history, you know, that related to the, if they do not have family history, diabetes history, and they are more likely to have this post 6 months success for glycemic control. And this AHB, one purpose of AHB is identify the good practice, right? So it indicates individual sessions works better to promote more success for weight reduction at end of program. And it turns out the 9 weeks or 12 weeks is more successful compared to 8 weeks. So a little bit longer program is beneficial there. And here, this is the title, you know, have to apologize. Toward the end, we see the main result related to this title. Well, this is within a short period, not a very long period, but very relevant, relatively large sample size. And we see that within a short period, the physical activity has a more significant effect on the weight loss success and glycemic control. But diet doesn't have that effect there. So, you know, I think we need to emphasize on the physical activity more. Okay, yeah, so I think that's pretty much the conclusion. I already discussed it. through the tables. Okay, and at the end, I will see HB interventions successfully improved weight reduction and glycemic outcomes among the participants. And we also conclude that HB interventions are more successful in reducing participants' hemoglobin level than the weight reduction. What we know is body weight is within a short period, it's not possible to reduce that, dramatically reduce. And of course, the preventive practice and programs should be developed and tailored for that targeted population. So here's a reference, and thank you.
Do you have any questions for Xiaohui?
The dietary changes and exercise changes, they were self-reported, of course.
I'm sorry, they were
self-reported?
Yes. Yes, this through the survey, you know, but this not we ask it, we measure, you know, there's a bunch of atoms asking, you know, how many servings of fruit vegetables do you eat, you know, how many side kind of the food do you eat. So for the diet success improved, it means they either meet the there's 12 atom scales. And if a participant, the answer increased at least six points, we consider that an improved dietary habit. And for the fruit and vegetable consumption, so if before you didn't meet five a day, but then later you meet five a day, then that's a considered improvement. Thank you.
Other questions?
You have a there for the program duration for the participants randomized to those different types of programs, so they were simply dropping out.
Well, this is through 12 different locations, so they basically they do not know the other what's going on because they're a little far away. They really just go to one community health center there.
So it's these are the programs of treatment duration?
Yes, yes. It's in the four states, you know, along the border, U.S.-Mexico border, there's 12 federally related health community centers. Health community centers.
So any other questions for Xiaohui? Our other speakers, are there questions of any of our other speakers? Yes.
Yeah, I have a question for the first speaker, and for his macro. So level two, the number of level two, when the, you know, when condition is less than 30, why? Some researchers
recommended huge number of groups. Also, the number of groups vary depending on the users. If you use the cross level or interactions, the number of groups is usually larger. Anyway, if you are not interested in kind of convention effect or across group across level interactions, you have a very limited number of groups, like I said, 10, 15. You can just simply use some approaches to deal with the cluster effect. To deal with IC6, within group observations, that's fine. If I have a very small number of groups, say less than 10, or say 7 or 8, no problem, you just put them into categorical variable, use dummy variables.
Are there any other questions? Sorry, but I have one. So, one I guess is for Trent.
Yes.
I was curious when you showed the POR methods for looking at, say, just taking your time-dependent variables and treating them as time-independent, and you showed different methods. Did you consider also looking at a decomposition of a time-dependent variable by having an average and then having, say, a difference from the average, so you can sort of decompose the time-independent aspect of it and the time-dependent and see how that would behave?
No, I didn't.
Okay. And then my last question for Xiaohui, is there any data that's going to be collected on your study to look at, say, some of these success at 6 months to see maybe at 12 months if there's going to be maybe there's going to be a regression since the program is now over? Or, and another thing I was curious is, were there data, like for example, of the almost exactly 50% of the people who did participate in the longitudinal part of the program, were there people who didn't receive the treatment, and then look at their sort of long-term outcomes? So basically for them it would just be measuring the baseline and finding them again and seeing whether or not the untreated people had a difference.
That would be interesting. But number one, you know, the program is ending, so there's no money from the grant. And plus, actually, I am not part of the project really collecting the data. So I really think yes, secondary data analysis. But that would be interesting. I think, you know, the only post is where the longest program, I can remember, was 24 months. It's 24 months. But then they only posted 6 months. That's too short.
So you may have the longer term data, it just wasn't part of the data that you have.
No, we do. Do not. We don't have money to do that. But I would, you know, need a project in the future. If I will be able to success to convince them, I would put that into the design. Do a long term.
And then you could be funded longer too.